sir. Let's get at it. It's a Monday morning right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. We are so glad you're along for the 17th day of January 2022. We have traversed from far and wide through the blizzards of Ontario, and we have made it to be at your beck and call for the next 4 hours. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you, and yep, we're just kicking off what will certainly be for this, up to this part of the winter, and what they're saying may be one of the biggest storms we've seen in Ottawa in quite some time. A once-in-a-10-year storm, they're calling it. We'll see. We'll see. It is going to be a big storm, though. The snow has begun to fall for the past several hours. It's still fairly light. There is a decent amount of snow on the ground, but the heaviest of the snow is likely to begin within the next hour. And the worst of the snow in terms of the amount of snow per hour will be this morning between about 7 and noon. And then it will start to get a little bit lighter through the afternoon, and it should wrap up by 7 or 8 o'clock tonight. So this is not a significantly long storm, but there's going to be a lot of snow. So the prediction is 20 to 30 centimeters. That's Environment Canada. The Weather Network is in with 25 to 40, and both of them saying locally, depending on where you are and where the storm exactly tracks, it could be even more than that. In fact, some predictions suggest some areas of eastern Ontario could get 50 centimeters of snow, which would make it one of the biggest snowstorms, single-day snowstorms, that we've ever seen in Ottawa. But we all made it. Hopefully you will make it to wherever you are going. We'll go through all the cancellations because there are a number of those in just a second. But we can tell you snow is the story of the day today. We really don't tell you, need to tell you much more than that. And it ain't that warm either. Minus 11 right now with a wind chill of minus 21. As we say good morning and hello on this Monday morning to Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simpson?
Very good, Jer. A few adjustments this morning, but shout out to the City of Ottawa. Crews working overnight. The old ride from North Manicot into the market was outstanding. Only diversion, my McDonald's at Billings Bridge, the big garbage cans in the way there, all of a sudden was not able to go through the drive-thru, so I had to go to the train yards, get a little coffee from the Tim Hortons here, slid in, found out there's no sports report because they're covering downstairs the storm of the century, which I would assume sports is way more important, but hey, it's all priorities. And what's unique about this storm, JR, and I don't recall it very often, almost all of our snowstorms come over the Great Lakes, right? This is a good old storm, and I also watch a weather network in the U.S. There are hundreds of millions of people affected by this storm.
Yes,
here,
always.
As it comes
in
up,
the eye of the storm. Millions in the way.
As it comes up the east coast of the United States, once you get to D.C., the corridor between D.C. and Boston has 100 million people, so you're good to go. So, she's coming and spinning, and looks like a big old hurricane is what it looks like. So hunker down, enjoy the day, and I didn't think it was all that bad. I brushed off, and I had a lane all the way down, and here we are, good to go.
Hammer, you're the first in of all of us, so you were on the roads, what, 3:30?
Yeah.
Any snow at that time?
Bit of dusting? Snow. I didn't need to brush my vehicle off at all. The roads were snow-covered, but it was, because it's so cold, it's just pretty much blowing away, so anybody that was on the roads before me kind of already gave me some tracks to follow in. So it was easy pleasy.
Yeah. All right.
No issues.
Yeah. So we certainly do not want to make a light for those of you who will be getting on the road here shortly, and they are saying, if you don't have to travel today, if you don't have to go anywhere, you're just going out because you need to pick up something that you don't really need to pick up, don't do it today. Like, today's the day not to be out on the roads if you don't need to be. And so here's the big thing. If you miss the news, school is not only, school buses are canceled today. This is the rare occurrence in which they've actually closed the schools. They don't normally close the schools, realizing that for a lot of parents, school is daycare as well, and parents got to go to work. But because of the amount of snow they are predicting today, the size of the storm, not only are the buses not going, but the schools are actually closed today. So don't take your child to school today. The schools are not open. That is right across eastern Ontario, except for Renfrew County. All right? In Renfrew County, the buses are canceled, but the schools are open. That's because they're expecting less snow up there. But that's the only place. Everywhere else, right across Eastern Ontario, all of the schools are closed.
What an incredible feeling for the teachers, eh? Like, it's just, my God, last night, Jerry, you get the news, and you're watching the football game if you're a fan, or you're watching TV, you're just like, man, let's just fire up a drink here and celebrate. This is awesome news.
Except they have to do remote learning.
No, I know. But and it,
so it's
it
just like it was hungover.
So it's just like it was last week. Yeah. It's just an extension by another day.
I think I'm picturing, what's her name, Cameron Diaz is the bad teacher. Just come in
beat
and
up.
Put the video. That was the best ever. Day one. Here you go. It's movie day.
I think it was around 8:30 last night. My wife and I headed up to bed a little bit early on. I was going to finish watching the football game. She was going to have a soak, to which my daughter ran into my bedroom, scared the bejesus out of me with the news of, I just got an email from my teacher. Schools are closed. You can't force me to go anymore. I have no choice. I need to stay for online schooling. Because we had that discussion, and I was pretty animated, and I wanted them to go to school. And my wife said, we'll make a decision in the morning. To which they all said, oh, we're not going.
Decision
made. You need to grab the kids after school, after we're done work here, Hammer, and go and pick at the school. I want protests.
Open this school.
I want your whole family doing the picket. Right,
I know you're in there. Open these doors now.
We're going to send a CTV news crew out.
No interviews.
So they are hoping everything, as far as the schools are concerned, will be reopened tomorrow. So a couple of their notes regarding the storm. First of all, as you heard mentioned in the news, the snow is going to fall so fast at points that the city says we won't even be able to keep up with it at points. So anything other than the main routes, it could take to get to the side streets, etc., could be most of the day. And in some cases, you're in one of those new neighborhoods, you know, the ones that don't even have street names. Maybe tomorrow. We'll see on that one. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. But as well, the city has also announced there's no garbage pickup today. So if you normally get your garbage on Monday, it's pushed back a day. And in fact, garbage collection is pushed back a day all week. All right. So if you have it today, it's tomorrow. If you have it tomorrow, it's Wednesday, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like almost a holiday week. All right. So that brings everybody up to date. So the schools are closed. There's no garbage. And if you don't have to go to anywhere today, don't. And the snow has begun falling. And the other thing we should mention is it's a pretty stiff breeze out there as well. So blowing and drifting snow is going to be an issue as well. Okay. All right. That's the weather. We got through it. We're here. Now we got to get to the sports. So we'll take a break. And when we come back, super wild card weekend, 3 absolute dog games and 2 really good ones. And so much to talk about in that Cowboys-Niners game yesterday.
How about them Cowboys?
Oh, my God. That was so... Oh, man. God love the Dallas Cowboys for always giving us something to talk about.
Just when your day didn't feel great after the Eagles crashed
exactly.
and burned, it was like, hey, this is just absolutely perfect to change around your mood.
That was the dessert after a not very nice main course, as I like to say. All right, so we'll go through all the football with you. Of course, talk about the Sens. Nice, tidy comeback win over Edmonton on Saturday night. 2-0 Alberta road trip. And now they're back home. Practice day today, at least scheduled for today, given the weather. And then they'll kick off a very busy week. 4-game week ahead for Ottawa, kicking off tomorrow night with the Buffalo Sabres in town. So bring you right up to date on all the Sens news as well. So it's a busy Monday morning. And we'll kick it all off with you coming up next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Get heavier as the morning rolls on, as much as 5 centimeters an hour starting to fall after 7 o'clock this morning. That's a lot of snow. Again, the predicted snow totals anywhere from 20 to 40. Looks like the 25 to 40 range, maybe closer to what we actually see, and in some localized areas could be even a little bit more than 40. Mark texts in at 1200. Also that most of the Gatineau schools are closed today as well. I want to bring you up to date on that. All right, so and we'll continue to keep you updated on the traffic and the schools throughout the morning, because I know that's a big deal for a lot of people, but so is sports. A lot of people just hunkered down on the weekend, watched some hockey and a whole lot of playoff football on Super Wild Card weekend. We've had 5 games already. We got one more coming up tonight. Unfortunately, 3 of the 5 that we saw on the weekend were absolute dog games. Terrible, including the bookend games yesterday, the first game and last night's game. The middle game, We could spend 4 hours on the middle game between Dallas and the Niners, and we'll spend a lot of time on it. But for those that may have gone to bed early last night and wondered what happened in the Chiefs-Steelers game, it was a bit of an odd game, a very slow start for both teams, bunch of punts both ways. And in fact, the Steelers scored first on a fumble return by T.J. Watt, so they're up surprisingly 7-0. The Chiefs actually didn't score with their first six possessions. However, on their next six possessions, touchdown, 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 touchdown.
The Chiefs go to a direct snap formation to Kelce. He fakes a handoff. He wants to throw a pass. He's got a touchdown. Kansas City. Travis Kelce finally gets that coveted touchdown pass he's waited for since 2014.
There you go. That would be the, was that the sixth touchdown? I don't think that that, anyway, this, my thing says Pringle here. Anyway, it was one of the six touchdowns. Not sure which one that ended up being. Anyway, six in total. 42-21 was the final. Chiefs beat the Steelers in the nightcap of the triple header yesterday. And, of course, a lot of eyes on Ben Roethlisberger. Widely speculated that this potentially, depending on how the Steelers did, of course, would be his final NFL game. And here's Big Ben pretty much assuring people of that.
I mean, I've been here a long time. And it's been a lot of fun. Like I said, God has blessed me. You know, we joke a lot, you know, about the Browns and going there, but it was meant to be that I was going to wear black and gold. Draft day, I had a black suit on with a gold tie. I mean, I'm just so thankful. I hope that I'm able to pass the legacy of what it is to be a Steeler from Dan Rooney, you know. And so we all miss him. Anyone that knew him misses him. And so it's just hopefully I could pass some of that on to some of the guys and it can continue the tradition of what it means to be a Steeler and get passed down.
So that's about as close as announcing your retirement without announcing your retirement. Yeah. Big Ben's last game, kind of like a sort of an exclamation point on Big Ben's season. 29 of 44 for 215 yards. You throw 44 passes and you only get 215 yards. That kind of tells you it's dink and dunk. Two touchdowns, no interceptions. And yeah, as we said, meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes, 30 of 39, 404 yards and five touchdowns in the game.
Yeah, and I think for Big Ben, JR, the way you should go out, and not a great season, but you left it all on the table, end of your contract. I don't think he embarrassed himself. Not great, but almost like Manning at the end, and you got your team to the playoffs. So, hey, good for him. And what I think he also did in between, obviously, the off-field issues he had a number of years ago, I think enough time it passed for some people where, yeah, I mean, it's just a focus on what is a Hall of Fame career, number retired, and one of the all-time Steeler greats, and certainly even hearing Mike Tomlin in his short little bit, like I said, went out the right way.
He did. All right, so that was the lopsided last game of the day yesterday. The lopsided first game of the day yesterday was in Tampa Bay with the Eagles visiting.
Here's the play, dropping to throw. Brady looks toward the end zone, throws. Caught ball, Evans. He's got a Tampa Bay touchdown. Does a somersault, and the Bucs put the dagger in the heart of the Eagles.
Yeah, that put them up 31-0. Philly would add a couple of garbage time touchdowns to make it much closer, the final score appear, than it actually was. 31-15 is the final. Tampa Bay all over Philadelphia. So the Brady and the Buccaneers are moving on to round two as well. Not much really to say about that game.
No, I thought early on, JR, it was fairly close. And then I got typical to Tom Brady, got a real hitting the passer, which I thought it was a call, but
It was a garbage
call. Yeah, a couple other calls that went their way, kind of swung the momentum. And then I didn't watch Hurts much this year, but recognizing what a great athlete he has, they kept seem to want to say in the broadcast an awful lot that, hey, that throw appeared to be open, but unfortunately he's not able to make it. So impressive by Tom Brady, and my oh my, at that age to be playing at that level. So move on to next week, but the amount of injuries are certainly starting to mount for the old Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, and they will host the winner of tonight's game in the divisional round on Sunday afternoon. That, of course, would be the Cards and the Rams. So that will be the final game of this weekend. Goes tonight just after 8 o'clock kickoff. So these two teams split their two games in the regular season. Cardinals won early. Rams won a late season game. L.A. is favored, last I saw, by 4.5. We'll have the game for you here on TSN 1200 tonight. Pregame at 7:30 and kickoff shortly after 8. All right, the middle game of the day yesterday. I don't even know where to start. There is so much stuff to go into. with this Cowboys-Niners game. But really, I mean, it does come down to the final play when it's all said and done. So the Niners are up 23-7 in the fourth quarter. Dallas gets 10 fairly quick points. Then there's this incredible fourth down or third down run by Deebo Samuel. And let's see, looks like he's got a first down, and they measure it, and he's got a first down, and then they review it, and they move the ball back about a quarter of the football, and that's enough that it's now short by about one link. And so the Niners at that point decide that they're going to kick it. And this is all with, I think there's 32 seconds to go, and Dallas is on their 20-yard line. And then it's boom, 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 right down the field to the point where there is, I believe, 14 seconds to go. Dallas has the ball on the San Francisco 40. Again, they need a touchdown to win. Can't kick a field goal, need a touchdown to win. So 14 seconds to go, ball's on the 40-yard line. Here we go.
Prescott in the gun, runs up the middle to the 30, to the 25 and slides. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Did he spike it in time? Didn't get it spiked in time.
They haven't said anything official.
That's the end of the game.
Oh, wow. There you go.
That was a bit of an edited version, but absolutely. I haven't said anything. That's the end of that. Was the ref.
I loved how he almost said it to the ref, and I don't know if they knew they were going to get barraged here, but it was more like, hey, if you guys are that stupid to run that play and obviously even get in the way of the referee who has to place the ball, then that's your fault. See you later. We're not going to review anything, and we're out of here.
Yeah, absolutely. They exited the stadium to a hail of bottles from Cowboy fans, not unlike the Browns back in the day. But again, a lot of controversy over, first of all, how the, you know, over the play call or over the decision, and we should put it that way, and then about the official and did he get in the way. And from there, I mean, there's just so many ways to parse it. So let's hear from Dak Prescott, first of all, on the play call.
I mean, it's risky, but when you've practiced it, as I said, as we've done over and over again, you're not necessarily worried about it. You're trusting your training, everything that you put into it. As I said, I went and ran, got down. As I looked up and was getting behind Tyler, once again, saw the 4 seconds, thought it was time. And, yeah, I mean, the rest, you don't prepare for things like that. But, I mean, I guess we'll start having to, knowing the way this just played out.
Of course, Tyler would be his center. And one of the many mistakes that was made was by Dak Prescott himself, in which he gave the ball after he slid down with the 4 seconds left to his center. And I mean, we saw this play like first of all, you should know that the umpire has to place the ball. And so the umpire is racing up behind him to try to grab the ball to put it down so the Cowboys have time to spike it. And in trying to get through the line, the umpire bangs into Prescott and he's trying to squeeze through, and then he picks up the ball and puts it down. Then he puts it down about another half yard back. Mm-hmm. Prescott had to keep the ball and give it to the umpire directly by giving it to the center and the center putting it down. That may have been the second that they actually needed to be able to spike it to get that one final play.
Yeah, I'm assuming in practice, Jerry, when you do that, you probably don't use a referee, right? So you're doing the different ways. And I didn't even I guess I knew the rule, but I don't know, and I follow the game.
Well, we saw it at the in Pittsburgh, right, with Chase Claypool on that Monday night game. Where, remember, he was celebrating with the ball?
Oh, that's right.
That's where that kind of rule that everybody kind of realized, hey, listen, man, when time is of the essence, what you have to do is you have to give the ball to the umpire right away because they've got to spot the ball.
Yeah.
That's where I think it should have been top of mind. And certainly if you're playing the game, it should have been top of mind.
And it also just felt like with Dallas going right into the excuse machine, right? The theme of, like, it was one play. Well, they were still, on the 20-yard line with 1 second left and had to get a touchdown?
Yeah.
So it wasn't where you're kicking a field goal. Like, come on, you know? And then again, you look at the series of mistakes and really the look on an undisciplined team and the coach, again, typical to his new Patriot or Green Bay days, just, you know, just mass chaos for the Dallas Cowboys yesterday.
Yeah. 14 penalties by the Cowboys in the game. That ties an NFL record for most penalties in one game. And I think the Cowboys were either the most penalized or the second most penalized team this season. So it was more of the same for Dallas as far as being undisciplined goes. And everybody had said all along, both those that watched Mike McCarthy in his days with the Packers, that time management is just, it's just not a strong suit as far as when to call timeouts, that sort of thing. I mean, there were so many examples of how poorly coached this team was. What was that entire sequence where they did the fake punt, got a first down out of it, and then left their punter and their punt team out on the field as the clock is running in attempting, well, they said on the broadcast, they're attempting to get San Francisco to call a timeout, to burn a timeout. San Francisco had their defense back on the field, so they've got the punter out. I don't think San Francisco is too worried about you running a play with your punt team out on the field. And meanwhile, you're down 23-7, and the clock is running, and it's the fourth quarter. Yeah. To try to bait them into taking a timeout, like, how idiotic is that? And then all of a sudden, the offense is running. Like, this was all set. Quite obviously, this was a set thing. Oh, we're going to show them. Watch. And they ran their offense out on the field too late. Right. And then the umpire gets in the way. And listen, now a Cowboy fan is complaining because the umpire didn't put the ball down. Listen, if you're going to run your offense out on the field with 8 seconds to go and try to run it at the last second, like, what was the point of all of that? What was the point of that? That's an exclamation point on poor management.
Yeah, and the special teams coach looked great. He was certainly getting a lot of love in the game. That was a great decoy that they ran, right? To at least kind of, hey, find
a... Well, it's a stupid play by San Fran. Like, it's San Fran.
Yeah, exactly.
The special teams have to be telling themselves, just let them kick it, okay? Whatever you do, so the outside gunners, right, those guys... Don't be pulling away. Just cover the guy, because that's the guy. If there's going to be a throw, that's the guy who you're going to throw. Instead, the guy peels off and he's wide open. Like, that was a really bad play by San Fran.
Yeah, it was. And did San Fran also have the roughing the kicker play as well? Or which game was? Okay, same thing. And a guy that had just been put in and, you know, hey, all these little mistakes that are made. And I guess the theme of the weekend for me, JR, and I love the NFL and the announcers are so great. So I look past it. But my gosh, when you look at the volume of calls and some of the bad calls across the board and things that are missed, wire, you know, are supposed to be the best of the best. There were certainly some pretty bad plays there.
Are you talking about bad officiating or bad playing?
Bad officiating, yeah. Just I thought the volume of calls at times and then a couple of missed calls. You had the whistle in the Bengals-Raiders game that kind of started it off and some of the other things. The roughing the passer one where they barely touched Carr and he flew the head back and all of a sudden it's 15 yards. I just thought this felt like, boy, this looks like a crew here. And just on TV nonstop, pedally, 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 pedally. That's what it felt like to me.
The Raiders-Cincinnati game, the first game, was poorly officiated, no doubt about that. From that inadvertent whistle to them deciding that the whistle somehow was after the play, even though the guy who blew the whistle was actually questioned about it, and you could hear it on the TV broadcast, and for the NFL to come out after the game and said, we asked the officials, and they said the whistle was after the catch, when quite clearly everyone could hear. I mean, I'm watching in live time. I'm like, did I just hear the whistle go as the ball is in the air? Yeah. Now, would it have changed the play? No, it would not have changed the play. No doubt about that. But there's a rule for it. If the whistle is blown inadvertently, the play is dead and they play the play over again. It's an official's error and they play the play over again. And everybody's kind of coming at me, or not everybody, but some people are saying, I would have caught the ball. You just can't arbitrarily change the rules and say, it would have been good anyway, so what's the diff? Yeah. There's rules in place for a reason. Anyway, I don't want to get down the track. We'll get to that game later. Yeah. But to your point of the officiating and the Dallas-San Fran game, like, there were 14 penalties against Dallas. I don't know how many against San Francisco, a number of those as well. I didn't think there were any calls to me that I thought were out of line. Like those Dallas penalties, the two defensive linemen holding calls, like those are obvious calls. They're taking guys down and throwing them down. Yeah. Neville Gallimore's hands to the face penalty, he's pushing the guy's helmet right off his head. Mm-hmm. Those are obvious calls. So, there were a lot of penalties, but you got to call those ones.
Yeah. And for Dallas, he can't do that. I also thought it was interesting, Jaron, live time watching. I heard a whistle before the throw, but on both of the replays they showed, the whistle sounded like it came after the throw, like the TV.
Sorry, which one are we talking
about?
Well,
back to the Cincinnati game. The lineup of the replays, that at least on my TV, didn't sound the same as when I watched in real time. When I watched in real time, the whistle blew, and then he kind of threw the ball, where it felt like on the replay, it's like, okay, he throws the ball, and then the whistle comes. It didn't seem to match up with what I thought I heard in real time, which was interesting. Mm.
Okay. Oh, I didn't see that because well, I mean, on top of that, if we're going back to that play again, what is the official is standing right there. It is not even close to Joe Burrow standing on to being out of bounds. Like I don't even know how you could make that call. Let alone and then blow your whistle and invert.
Yeah, and I watch the officials at times here, and it looks to me like a lot of elderly fellas that are in nice shape, but half of the time are trying to get themselves out of the way to try to make a call. And for the back to the Dallas game, like full marks to the referee there. That fellow was just a hustler. He was doing everything he could he wanted that ball to get back in place. He gave the Dallas Cowboys every chance he could.
One of the things the NFL does, and maybe this speaks to, you know, if we're going to go down the road of the officiating is not very good. And for the Raiders-Bengals games, I absolutely agree. I didn't think in any of the other games, and I watched pretty much all of the games except for the second half of last night's game. I thought the officiating was fine. Mm-hmm. There were if there's a lot of penalty calls, that's more on the teams than on the officials. Like Dallas getting 14 penalties yesterday, that's on Mike McCarthy. You know, a lack of discipline on the team goes right to the head coach, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you can't, if you're doing it all regular season, you're not going to stop for the playoffs, right? It's like they want to clean it up. No, you've allowed that to go for 17 games. That's exactly the way the players are going to play.
So a lot of people, I think yourself included, had predicted that if there was going to be an upset on the weekend, San Francisco was the team to do it, and they were full value for the win. This was not just a controversial play at the end. Otherwise, you know, Dallas, if it had gone Dallas's way, they would have won the game. They were the better team, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, on the whole, San Francisco came as advertised, and they did it with some injuries as well along the defensive line. Nick Bosa left the game. He was an absolute terror when he was in there. But he left the game with a concussion late in the first half, so he was out for the second half. So they were able to pressure Dak Prescott for most of the game. And I mean, if Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't throw that interception in the fourth quarter, we're not even talking about that last play. I mean, you got to just protect the football, Jimmy. Yeah. All you had to do was protect the football, but you just know with Jimmy Garoppolo, and he managed the game very well up until then. He made some nice throws, but it's just you just know it's coming at some point, and that was. That was what let Dallas back into the game. They had no business.
Yeah, very, very much so. And it's just funny with him. And again, I'm a fan, and I recognize he's also gone to a Super Bowl. And people want to say, you know, can you do it with him? Hey, it's hard to find many quarterbacks, including Dak Prescott. You can say, well, can you do it? Well, he hadn't done anything. But you're right. The game was there, and everyone's kind of building up. Will he end up doing? And you're like, wow, ends up throwing that. But hey, they're able to get through. And then the other theme I thought on the Dallas side, Zeke Elliott, was it 12 carries for 31 yards? Like, he's got nothing in his game.
Well, he had a torn PCL, right?
Oh, okay.
And he's been battling a knee injury.
Oh, okay.
And again,
okay.
If we want to go back to the coaching again, you know, in Tony Pollard, they've got more, and all the Cowboy fans out there listening right now know this. This guy was a better runner than Zeke Elliott all season. Yeah. He had 4 runs yesterday. Yeah. 4. Like, why are they trying to run Zeke Elliott all the time when he quite obviously is hampered by this knee injury? Yeah. Like, he has no burst whatsoever.
Oh, he doesn't. That first little hop he makes. So, okay, well, that makes sense with the injury, Jer. But, yeah, you're just looking for opportunities or options, and there was nothing there.
There was not. All right, so that was an incredible game. Your thoughts on the Dallas Niners game are welcome. You can text us at 12-1200. Any of the games, actually, from the weekend, but I think that is the one that most people are chatting about, and it would not surprise me whatsoever when the television ratings come out tomorrow or today, later on today. That'll be one of, if not the highest rated playoff games that we've seen. And the ratings for the NFL were off the charts this past season, and you've got two marquee franchises in the perfect 4:30 window, and everybody's at home on a Sunday. And in the States, right, this is a long weekend, Martin Luther King Day. It's a holiday today, so a lot of people would have you know, just kind of hunker down in the middle of a holiday weekend to watch that that as well. So that's going to do a huge television number, and that's going to have a lot of people talking the way that game ended last night.
Yeah, and I think for traditional football fans, JR, I kind of look at a trifecta of cities that have been hard-pressed economically and love their teams, and that would be Cincinnati, Buffalo, and Cleveland. Of course, Cleveland not in the playoffs, but to see the Bills, it will smoke the old Patriots. And for Cincinnati, first playoff win in 31 years. Those are a couple of feel-good stories, and I think a lot of people easy to cheer for, I think, are the Bills and the Bengals at this point.
All right, so the playoffs are the divisional round for this coming weekend are set, even though we've still got one more game to go. So the Saturday games next weekend, the 4:30 game is the Bengals and the Titans. Hey, see? AFC South always gets the Saturday 4:30 game, always. All right, and not that the Bengals are a huge draw, although they're a great story, yeah, and I think if they can find a way to beat Tennessee and get to the AFC Championship game, a lot of people will be going, maybe I should learn more about this team because they've got some good young players and they're probably going to be back here a few times. So that's the 4:30 game. The Saturday night primetime game is the Niners at the Packers. So a nighttime game at Lambeau. That just has cold written all over it. And then the Sunday game. So 3 o'clock is the first game next Sunday. That's the Bucs hosting the winner of tonight's game between the Cardinals and the Rams. And then the primetime game next Sunday night. I think there'll be a lot of anticipation for the Bills and the Chiefs. Rematch of last year's AFC Championship game. Buffalo looks like it is on form right now, and Kansas City, after a really slow start to this year, is certainly in form as well. I think a lot of people would say that would make a great AFC Championship game, but those two teams are meeting in the divisional round. That's going to be an absolute war at Arrowhead coming up next Sunday night between the Bills and the Chiefs.
Yeah, all the matchups with Cincinnati, as you said, on the, you know, with Burrow and all the young people around him, all those full games just like this past weekend look like all great football games.
All right, so keep your thoughts coming. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. Duke Ellingson will join us coming up after 9 o'clock. We'll get his breakdown of the five games so far for Super Wild Card Weekend. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the Sens. What a nice, tidy comeback win that was Saturday night in Edmonton. Did you stick around or were you out after two? Late start, they're down 3-1. You're thinking, probably not going to come back. They did. They did, incredibly, with 5 third-period goals. We'll come back and talk about that game and set up a busy Sens week ahead. That's when we return right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 6:53 on this Monday morning. All right, Sens are scheduled to be back at practice later on this morning, 10:30. Don't know whether the storm will have any impact on that at all. And their next game is scheduled for tomorrow night. Buffalo Sabres in town in what will be an empty Canadian Tire Center. Of course, no fans allowed at that game. But the Sens certainly will be feeling pretty good about themselves after Saturday's huge comeback win over Edmonton, a game in which they were down 3-1 after two, rallied back with three in a row to go up 4-3. Then Darnell Nurse tied the game 4-4. Cody Ceci took a late third period penalty, so the Sens are on the power play.
Stutzle on the turn, gets it across, quick shot, scores! Either this was tipped or this is Norris. I'm not sure Norris took the shot. Either way, Ottawa's got a one-goal lead.
Yes, Dean Brown it was. Josh Norris credited with his second goal of the game, 16th on the season. The Sens would add an empty netter from there and incredibly come back with 5 in the third period to beat the reeling Edmonton Oilers by a score of 6-4.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming at all, JR. Wasn't overly impressed with Edmonton, but from an Ottawa perspective, wow. And Edmonton side looking at that and thought to yourself, my oh my, when you just feel like a collapse and all the negativity that's rolling around there, hey, we'll take the positive side from Ottawa, but yeah, that couldn't have come at a worse time for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, DJ Smith, here he is. You know, they were not going after two, so DJ put the old blinds in a blender in the third period, started moving the forward units around.
I thought a couple guys weren't going, and, you know, I think I needed to spread it around to get a little more depth, get Drake and Timmy together, you know, was what I was looking for. And I thought Paulie was having a good game. So I was thinking if I could get them together, they'd have to defend him a little bit, maybe opens up Norris and Tkachuk. And I thought my Gambrell line was really good again tonight as well. And then, obviously, unexpected, the Tierney line is the difference.
There you go. Yeah, Chris Tierney and Adam Gaudette got a goal in the game that actually started the comeback in the third period. So Formanton on that line as well, and he got a goal. Yeah, that was incredibly unexpected in terms of who did some of the scoring in the third period, but it was all said and done. It was Josh Norris that gets the game winner. And don't look now, but the Sens, I think we said at the time, December 1st, they were just back from that California road trip. The whole Matt Murray saga had just begun. Vancouver Canucks came to town for that first home game, and they got whacked 6-2, in which... I don't say it often about teams, but it looked like the players had almost given up in the third period. Like, it was a terrible, terrible game. And we said at the time, is that rock bottom? Well, you don't know where rock bottom is until you start to come out the other side. And since that game on December the 1st, the Sens have gone 7-3-1 with a lot of time off in the midst of it as well. So they're playing some much better hockey, and the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, and there are times, Jer, when people say, hey, a team quits, and there's other times where if you're looking at kind of the science, hey, you just run out of gas. Now you can run out of morale as well, and other than the stinker against Toronto a couple of weeks ago, they have settled things in, things feel better about the team, and yeah, without a doubt, some guys have hit their stride. Interestingly enough, injuries have opened up opportunity, and a lot of those guys have seized it. And you think even to the difference of Stützle with the Pinto White injury, Tierney not being able to do it, the decision to put him in there, and all of a sudden Alex Formanton slides into his spot. Voila! You got a little bit of a combo there. So there's been some real positives, some good things. And I also felt in watching that game, JR, I don't know the Skinner fella very much, but I just felt like, hey, just put pucks on net there. He did not, at least for that night, other than being big, he didn't look overly athletic to me. But I haven't watched him a lot, and his numbers have been very good in the minors, and even when he's been up top. But he looked shaky right from the start. Even that first Norris goal just went right under him.
And the Sens did that without Connor Brown as well. If you missed that news, he finished the game in Calgary with a, I'm guessing it must be a hairline fracture.
Exactly.
Because they've said it's, it was kind of termed as a broken jaw. A broken jaw means you're going to be out for a long, long time.
Well, you're going to get it wired, JR, right? I mean, that's when the serious one, and then the weight loss and not being able to train, and not to minimize it, but yeah, it's certainly a little bit different here, and hopefully it heals sooner than later.
They have said Connor Brown will be out week to week, so it sounds more of a shorter term thing, but he did not play in the game on Saturday, but full credit to him because he was injured. They pointed out in the broadcast, he was actually injured during the warm-up in the game in Calgary. Thomas Chabot came in, wired one, hit the crossbar, and Brown, who does wear a helmet in the warm-up, it deflected off the crossbar and hit him right in the jaw. He went off, came back, played the entire game, and scored a goal, I think, in that game, did he not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I had the beauty set up to Paul. They had a great game.
Had a very effective game in that one, and then later on Friday we find out, he's got a hairline fracture of his jaw. So Connor Brown did not play in the game on Saturday, which, again, when you think about key players in the team and not playing and other guys having to step up, that was certainly the case. A lot of people, at least in my social media feed, are going to bat for old Eric Brännström. Mm-hmm. Man, he is the cat's meow in the eyes of a lot of people right now. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, and I think we've been pretty consistent all along. I know you're not a huge fan of him, but when you line up who's available to play at the NHL level for Ottawa, he's in their top six, to be sure. Like, he's better than other guys that are around. What these last now 51 games, to me, are for is to see whether Eric Brännström is going to be or should be a part of this team going forward beyond the end of this season and as you hope to become a playoff contender in years down the road.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt, and that's where you kind of have to talk about your discussion, JR, and I think some people have brought up some very valid points. You don't have to have the defense going into next year that's going to win you a Stanley Cup, and if you have to go a little smaller and a little more mobile, but the real issue here you have to ask both from a personnel standpoint and management and the coaches, though, is just how many things have opened up the last 2 years just based on simple injury. I mean, it hasn't come by design. It's been Stepan getting hurt, and it's been Delzato not being good enough. It's every guy, you know, as I say, the center ice, that suddenly Stützle's in there. And on the back end from the very opening night, there's no way that in the case of Brown or Delzato that they should have been playing ahead of Brännström. And whatever his deficiencies are, we discuss at times. But as you just pointed out, he is absolutely better. And for where you're at as a hockey team right now, if I have to give up a little bit of the size – and put skill and mobility in, well, of course you're going to be a better hockey team. And like I say, the numbers speak for themselves, and even how capable they've been so far without one of the league's elite defenders in Zaitsev.
Yes. Yes, they've somehow been able to overcome.
No, but that as well.
Yes, yeah. And I know you're mocking.
No, I am, Jared, but I'm also going to be serious in the sense of it. And I won't even say with Zaitsev, because I do believe when healthy that he could be one of the six. You know, he's ahead of where...
He's competitive, yeah. Not elite.
No. And he's ahead of where Bernard Docker. But just when you go back to other players, like how you could look at this as the start of a season, and even I'll throw Mete in there. From Mete to Brown to Delzato, why would they ever be playing ahead of Eric Brännström? And like I said, I don't know long term. I'm not sold, but I can tell you that he's better than. Delzato can't play. The fascination with Josh Brown, well, that's up to the coach himself. But yeah, I mean, it's really, and for wanting to finish a season last year, and everybody talked about the record and the record with Pinto in. Well, the record was also there with Brännström playing with Zub, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that you know, wouldn't you have thought that you would have wanted to kind of recreate what was successful from the year before? And this is what we went through last year for the first 20 games was, a lot of, you just call it dumb luck by the end of the day, where most of it cleared out because of older player injury and getting rid of guys. Right. And now this time, it's unfortunately been a bit of, hey, I've kind of seen that movie before, but... they have turned it around. They're playing better. And more importantly, it's fun, JR, when you win and the young players play well. I mean, it's just a different feel in the whole city, the whole social media is that, you know, you look through kind of, hey, who's contributing, who's playing right now, and it gives people something to look excited about. Well, it's kind of the new season kicks off.
There's optimism.
Yeah, exactly.
There's optimism, which has been in short supply for far too long. Yeah. Here in Ottawa. All right, so a busy week ahead for the Sens, which is the first time we've been able to see that, say that in a long time as well, with four games on the docket this week, starting with tomorrow night, a visit by the Buffalo Sabres. First time we'll see the Sabres this year. Not necessarily a bad thing. Ottawa, by the way, within 4 points of Buffalo in the standings, and they've got six games in hand as well. So Sabres are here. It'll be an empty Canadian Tire Center for that game. And then the Sens going right back out on the road for three in a row. They're in Pittsburgh. Penguins are playing great hockey. That game goes Thursday. They're in Washington Saturday. Caps are also really good this year. And then they'll close the road trip in Columbus on Sunday. So four games coming up this week for the Sens. Just past 7 o'clock, we'll take a break, get you the latest news, the latest on the storm, and everything in conjunction with that. Coming up with Chris Holsky from the CFRA News Center. I'll run down a very busy scoreboard, all of the football details from Super Wildcard Weekend, and we'll come back. We'll get more into that, the incredible finish to the Dallas-San Francisco game. And we'll also give you details on our brand new contest, which kicks off today with Gabriel Pizza. It's our big game contest. $100 up for grabs from Gabriel Pizza. Kicks off this morning right here on TSN 1200.